Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Broadcasting live from an undisclosed location in the universe. Welcome to WithInsightsRadio.com, your source for achieving self-discovery and inspiration. With your hosts, Iggy Garcia, David Chukros, Katie Singeneagle. The call in number is 646-595-3440. So kick back and relax and enjoy the show.
Yes?
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to WithInsightsRadio.com with Iggy Garcia and Rosa Bell on the Blog Talk Radio Network.
Hello.
Hey, Rosa.
Hey, welcome to With Insights Radio, everyone.
Welcome, everybody.
Rosa
welcome.
Bell and Iggy Garcia. Wow, what amazing day you were sharing with me, and we were kind of holding back, not to you know spill our beans with everybody, but we've had quite an amazing day, amazing weekend. We participated in the sacred drumming that you facilitated at Mystic Nirvana. And it was amazing. The energy, the space that you created, very cool. The people that attended, it was just it was perfect. So if you don't mind, maybe you could share a little bit about this while I see if our guest is on. So go ahead and... Yeah,
we did a drumming, sacred drumming ceremony yesterday here in Columbus, Ohio. We were... actually did a sermon, too. We just tried to, open up the energies and welcome, spirit into our lives and healing to occur. And, basically that's what happened. What ended up happening was we invited energies to come, through the lights. And we had a lot of spirit orbs appear. You probably didn't see them until you actually had confirmation with pictures especially. But it was totally amazing. I mean, it was just totally amazing, and at the end of the night, it just kept getting better and better and better, because you ended up calling me later on and told me about your experience you saw.
Yeah, last night was pretty magical. We got home, I think, close to 11 o'clock, and my husband was talking to me, and he's walking in the bedroom, kind of looking out the window. It looked like to be a full moon or something close to a full moon, overcast, cloudy skies, and he was starting to say, oh my gosh, what's out the window? So he was like, the kids basically rushed to see what he was talking about, and I eventually got out of my bed, in the comfortable bed. I'm going, what's this fuss about? And I look out the window, and he's like, look there. And we were like trying to figure out what is going on. And then as we were focusing on one of the big lights, energy balls that was transforming into shape, there were other energy balls, like about five of them, bouncing off of each other and going into circles, and it looked like they were spiraling about 200 feet above the treetops. Right, perfectly in sight for us to witness. So, I mean, I'm just blessed that I was able to have that experience. I'll never forget it, ever, ever. I mean, it wasn't scary for me or anything like that. The more that I am able to process and put word to it, one of the orbs was definitely, or I don't even say orbs because it wasn't really an orb. It was energy. It was definitely had movement and it had shape to it. The shape would change and get smaller and bigger and expand. But one of the things that I felt, as far as what that was and what I connected to the shape, was almost like wings. It looked like wings kind of going, expanding in and out, because it was like a pulsating type of thing. So it was really cool, very magical, because my entire family got to, me, my two boys, and my husband got to witness that.
Mm-hmm.
And that lasted for about 15 minutes. So that was really cool. Yeah. I called you. I'm like, oh, my gosh, go outside. See what I see. And obviously, it, it had to be the perfect angle, you know, the clouds and the light of the moon and the city and so forth, being that I'm in the city. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. But, you know, Iggy, we have going to have an amazing show tonight, and please interject. As you know, I know you had a lot going on this weekend, and we'll try to fit that all into the conversation somehow. So, but we have a wonderful guest on tonight. Her name is Camilla Chance. She was born in England and educated in London, Switzerland, Italy, and Australia, where she graduated in the arts from Melbourne University. Then she became a member of the Baha'i. Actually, when she gets on, we need to ask her what that is. Baha'i faith.
Baha'i.
At the
Baha'i
age of
faith.
22. Baha'i. Very good. Thank you. Since graduation, Camilla has been a lyric writer for an international performing group, the Kubani, correct me, Cossack, a high school teacher, an editor, a wife, a mother, a book reviewer for two prestigious Australian newspapers. And actually, I have to add that you're calling us from Australia.
Hello, yes.
Yes, wonderful. So we're just introducing you right now, Camilla. Thank you for being on With Insight. And from 1980 to 1982, she reviewed books by and about Aboriginal people, aiming to create understanding of the then often misunderstood Australian Aboriginal culture. Camilla met, this is where it got interesting, Aboriginal elder Banjo Clark in 1975, and at his request wrote down his story and philosophy. This turned out to be a 27-year-old long labor of love, and you know that's where we're going to go ahead and I'm not going to, you know, talk about your whole story, Camilla, because that's why we have you on the show. So first, we want to welcome you to With Insights Radio.
Thank you very much, Rosa. And I'm very honored to be on your show and very honored to speak with you. And Iggy, I think that you do absolutely marvelous work. And
thank you.
I feel that the people who change the world ultimately are the people with great compassion, and that was Banjo Clark, and I feel that you both qualify also, and so I have great hopes for the future with what you're doing. Anyway, I thought I'd mention that.
Well, thank you very much. I'm sorry, I
didn't realize that you understood I was on, and I hope I didn't interrupt your show at all.
That's okay.
Did I interrupt?
No, you did not. Everything is perfect just the way it is, but we definitely want to make sure that we give our listeners a little bit of a background. You wrote this book, and we want to make sure that we talk about the book for sure, Wisdom, Man Banjo Clark, so that's going to be the theme. But, you know, we really want to know a little bit about you, too, and also, through this conversation, and it is a conversation, so, you know, we just want you to have a good time and share as much as you feel that our listeners need to know. And also, to let you know, we do have people on listening via the Internet, and we have people who are on the chat who might have questions for you as we go along. And so we might say, hey, somebody's got a question for you, and, you know, we'd love for you to be able to give them some insight on that as well. So let's go ahead and get started.
Yes, the book is Wisdom Man by Banjo Clark, as told to Camilla Chance, you would say. I'd say Chance, but you'd say Chance, I think. And
yeah.
It's published by Penguin, and I have a website, www.wisdommanbook.com. And if a person goes to the website, they find four videos, one with Banjo himself talking, although he's passed on now, and he talks beautifully and from the soul, deeply from the soul, and one of me and one of all sorts of things, one of a United States woman who experienced what she feels is a miracle to do with Banjo, and one of a short of a film that may be made. And also from that website, you can order the book as well. It takes you to a link for Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com. So it's www.wisdommanbook.com. Anyhow, enough of that. I met Banjo, as you said, in 1975, and he has passed on, and there were 3,000 people at his funeral. He had nothing, he possessed nothing, he hated money himself, and it was, if he ever had any, he gave it away to people that he understood people. He had the deepest understanding of people as an Australian Aboriginal, and if he met someone on a train who was a young man who was going back to his wife who had kicked him out and was in the despair, Banjo would give him his money and realize that he needed it, and things like that. Everywhere he had enormous compassion. And at his funeral, where there were 3,000 people, somebody up on stage quoted a proverb, "It is appointed unto man once to die, and after that the judgment." And he stretched out his arms as if to encircle the crowd and said, "Well, this is the judgment." There was a traffic jam in a meadow, people trying to get to his funeral. Yeah. Anyway, he was like that, but he possessed nothing material at all. And actually, Aboriginal people don't think in terms of possessions. They share everything. One of their most fundamental rules is sharing. And another thing which we all need today very, very much is that their sense of community embraces the spiritual realm. There is almost no division between materially walking on earth and being passed on in Aboriginal view. I don't know if you know the Australian song Waltzing Matilda, but that's quite significant in that there is an Aboriginal version. Do you know it, or do your listeners know it?
No, I don't know if I know that. I'm not sure.
What's it called again? I want to make sure I write that down.
Waltzing Matilda. It was really the Australian national song, Waltzing Matilda. But I'll tell you the words, and I'll tell you the meanings, because a lot of United States people do know it, I realize, but they don't know what it means. And a lot of Australians don't know what it means either, but they sing it with great sentimentality and homesickness if they're overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little strange if you don't know it, but a lot of people do know it who are not Australian. So it goes, once a jolly swagman camped by a billabong under the shade of a coolabah tree, and he sang as he watched and waited till his billy boiled, "You'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me." That's the first verse. Now, a swagman is someone who carries his bedding with him all around Australia and looks for jobs and will just sleep in the meadow or wherever where he's working at the time. And he camped by a billabong. A billabong is a river, under the shade of a coolabah tree, and he sang as he watched and waited till his billy boiled. So your billy is a can in which you make tea, a cup of tea, and you hang it from three sticks reaching a sort of roof over a fire, and you boil your billy over the fire. And "You'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me" means you will be carrying your swag around Australia with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next verse is, "Down came a jumbuck to drink by that billabong. Up jumped the swagman and grabbed him with glee. And he sang as he stowed that jumbuck in his tucker bag, 'You'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me.'" So a jumbuck is a young sheep, and it came to drink at the river, and the swagman grabbed it and killed it and put it in his food compartment of his swag that he was carrying around. And "Down came the squatter mounted on his thoroughbred, up sprang the troopers, 1, 2, 3. Where's that jolly jumbuck you've got in your tucker bag? You'll come a-waltzing, Matilda, with me. So the squatter is the farmer, and he's come to look for his sheep. He says, you've taken it, and so you'll go off to prison with, I'll take you off to prison, and the troopers are the mounted police. Up jumped the swagman and sprang into the billabong. You'll never catch me alive, said he, and his ghost may be heard as you pass by that billabong. You'll come a-waltzing, Matilda, with me. So the swagman jumps into the river and drowns, and his ghost may be heard. It says you'll be carrying your flat swag around Australia with me. Now, the thing is that the Aboriginal version I heard, there was no mention of a ghost. It says, up jumped the swagman and sprang into the billabong, and him singing out, as you pass by that billabong, you will come a-waltzing, Matilda, with me. There is no division between living and death being passed on. There is no mention of a ghost. And that was the Aboriginal version, playing an accompaniment by tapping two spoons together, playing it on the spoons. So I just thought that's a pretty solid reminder of Aboriginal sense of community. The spiritual world is so close to them, they're so conscious of the spiritual world all around them, that they can walk with total confidence in the desert, knowing that they will be shown the signs of where water is, because their ancestors are all around them protecting them, and they love the spiritual realm, and the spiritual realm loves them and will protect them and show them through their intuition and show them practical signs and totally protect them. And this is something that human beings in a lot of places have lost now, especially living in the city. And I think it's something tremendously valuable that Indigenous people have. So anyhow, that's my little spiel on that one.
Definitely. You know, what I heard was, what my higher self heard was that, you know, they were one with spirit and nature and all of the spirit within their environment, their surrounding. It was, they were able to survive because they didn't see themselves as separate. So if there was, let's say, maybe a disturbance, or if there was movement into the force of the matrix, I guess, if you will, of life, that they would be able to in tune with that because it's a part of them. So
that's right. They had a huge sense of sensitivity to danger. And so they knew the spiritual realm would let them know if there was something bad happening. So if that message had not come through, they knew that everything was as it should be and wonderful. So they had that confidence, yes.
Absolutely, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that with me. I think that spirit saying, go check out that song in addition to that, because there's just a lot of layers to that. You know, part of, you know, doing this show with my brother Iggy is we get to meet amazing people like you and learn and continue our experiences through others. So, yeah, what a blessing. Very cool. Wow.
You know, Mrs. Chance, I was just curious, you know. I keep looking at the book. When I pick up the book, I feel like there's a very big energy charge, and I'll tell you why I said that. Earlier I was talking to my sister, my internet went down after I showed her the picture through my little camera.
Webcam.
And I'm thinking to myself, my webcam, and everything just shut down, and I told Rose, I said, you know what, I wonder if his name really is Banjo or if that's just a nickname. Like, I go by a nickname, Iggy. My real name is Ignacio, but
yeah.
I was just really curious, you know, that this book has a lot of energy when I pick it up and I feel it, and I had to plug in hard on with my hard wire. You know, I can't go wireless at the moment, but it's just pretty amazing. A lot of amazing stuff has been happening lately.
Yes, it is. It's a time for amazing stuff again, and people are more sensitive to it. Yes, you asked about his name, Banjo, so I'll tell you how he got his name. because you probably have not read all the book.
No,
and,
I have not.
And your listeners haven't. Most of your listeners have not. So there is the custom among Aboriginal people, tribal people, that your mother's brother initiates you. When you are born, you will be given a name, but when you reach puberty, you will be given a new name which expresses your true self. The thing is, of course, that certainly parents do not feel they own their children. That's quite foreign to community life among Aboriginal people. The child is looked at, the community brings the child up anyway, but the child is looked at and it's noticed which way its talents lie, and it will be given a name that expresses those talents. So anyhow, Banjo was born Henry James Clark, and when he was about 14, because he didn't know his exact age, he was walking with his uncle, his mother's brother, and that's significant because it is your mother's brother that initiates you. And he was walking in town with his mother's brother, and there was a sort of modern initiation. The Aboriginal people they have huge integrity, and they will find an Aboriginal solution to everything. So all modern situations that confront them, they will adapt their tribal feeling, and they will find a modern, ancient Aboriginal way of doing anything. So anyhow, he was walking in town with his mother's brother, and, of course, was no longer fully tribal. And somebody came up to them and said, "Oh, this is a nice little boy you've got with you. What's his name?" And Banjo's mother's brother said, "His name is Banjo." And that is the very first time that Banjo had been called that name.
He's probably looking around going, "Who, me?"
What did you say?
He's probably looking around going, "Who, me?"
Yes, yes, that's right. And he didn't quite realize the full significance of it, but later, of course, his character has developed, and he did. But the situation was that as a little boy, he was always making up stories and rhymes to fit every situation he found himself in. And Australia's most famous poet in the old days, but it's a white poet from European stock, Australia's most famous poet was called Banjo Paterson. And Banjo Paterson wrote the words to Waltzing Matilda. So Banjo was nicknamed Banjo, became his tribal name, after Banjo Paterson, because he had a talent for telling stories and making up rhymes. And that, of course, eventually expanded into the book Wisdom Man. And the thing is that Aboriginal people kept their tribal ways and their semi-tribal ways very much secret. And they had to, of course, because old people were forbidden by the European settlers to pass on their knowledge or pass on their language. And normally they didn't trust the youngsters, they didn't trust them anymore and didn't pass it on. But where Banjo lived, the knowledge was passed on and they chose Banjo. And Banjo kept things secret until we wrote Wisdom Man, or I wrote it down and he told me, because he felt the world desperately needed Aboriginal wisdom and Indigenous wisdom in general now. And it was time, because if the world did not have it, that would be an absolute disaster. And he felt that it was necessary to avert that disaster if possible. So that's why Wisdom Man, the book.
There must have been, that says a lot about you, Camilla, as a person, for him to share the sacred knowledge and be the messenger that you are. And, you know, as you were talking and explaining banjo and the name and so forth, and, you know, the picture that came to my mind was a banjo is an instrument, you know, and banjo is the instrument for humanity. It's so powerful in more ways than one.
Yes, true, yes. It's a very powerful book,
yeah. Yeah, I look forward to reading it. You know, you also were very accepted by the Aboriginal people. Is that correct?
All right, you want me to talk about that?
If you can just touch upon that, because you were the first non-Aboriginal to receive the prestigious Unsung Hero Award from the Aboriginal people. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I should perhaps mention that Banjo also initiated me. He gave me an Aboriginal name, which was Warramye, which means left-handed woman. And in a great many tribes, to be left-handed naturally meant you were seen as being more engulfed by, in touch with the spiritual realm. So you were more absorbed into the spiritual realm if you were naturally left-handed. I should probably tell you that soon after I met Banjo, his children came to see me in a sort of delegation, all of them, and they said, "We want you to write about us. We trust you. We want you to write about us." And I said, "I simply don't have the knowledge. I've only just met you." And however, of course, Banjo took it seriously, and his children forgot all about having done this. And Banjo and I did work on the book, as you know, and it took 27 years.
Wow.
Anyhow, yes, about getting Unsung Hero Award, this was the launch of the second edition of Wisdom Man, which was 3 years later after it was published, and there was a huge gathering in Melbourne, the city of Melbourne, and Aboriginal people came from all over Australia. There were 500 in the audience, and it was supposed to be a launch. And there was a set program for the launch, but I insisted on having an Aboriginal compere, mistress of ceremonies. So anyway, suddenly in the middle of proceedings, this woman said, "Now we are deviating and Camilla doesn't know anything about this, but I would like to call her up on stage to receive this award. And it's supposed to be only given to an Aboriginal person. That's one of the rules. And it's not given lightly, and it's not given regularly. We give it when we are inspired to give it. And it's given in the Aboriginal way. Nothing's done quite regularly in the Aboriginal way. It's all through inspiration. And my ancestors have insisted that this award be given to Camilla. I cannot avoid it. The spiritual realm has instructed me, and I cannot avoid it. And this award is given to somebody who has worked hard behind the scenes without pushing him or herself forward for the sake of Aboriginal people. And anyhow, Camilla, we feel, qualifies. And now, Camilla, will you please say a few words?" So I, of course, burst into tears. I'd been called up on the stage and burst into tears. And my first words were, "Does any kind member of the audience have a handkerchief?" And anyway, eventually a handkerchief was handed up to me. And I thanked the ancestors, I thanked Banjo and the spiritual realm, and then I thanked everybody there. But yes, it was it was a very beautiful glass leaf, a huge leaf made of glass with the veining in it on a stand. It was extremely beautiful. Aboriginal people are so artistic. And it was blown totally by Aboriginal people. It was done totally by Aboriginal people. And as I said, there were representatives from all over Australia. And, of course, there were many non-Aboriginal people in the audience, too, but Aboriginal people came from everywhere.
That's
so it was
cool.
a great
that's,
honor, yes.
That's a wonderful story.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. I was very interested in that.
Thank you.
Sure. You know, as I'm getting to learn more about you and so forth, the if you don't mind, because I would like for you to just share with us what the Baha'i, am I saying it correctly, hopefully, faith is. Is that have something to do with the Aboriginal culture then?
Yes, well, the Baha'i faith teaches that Indigenous people who are true to their old laws and living in the old way are living the closest these days to how God wants us to live in the future. So that, of course, naturally stimulates us to want to be friends with Aboriginal people, because the Baha'i faith is a series of written laws. Baha'u'llah, the founder, whose name means the glory of God, wrote over 100 volumes giving ways of being for the future, ways of hospitality and kindness and making sure that everybody in the whole world is well fed and educated to be without prejudice and things like that. All prejudice is seen as destructive according to Baha'i writings. So anyhow, this makes us want to be friends with Aboriginal people because they're living this already. They're living it. It's not a series of written laws. And it again made Banjo want to be a Baha'i because he sees the Baha'i faith as aboriginality for the modern world. And he kept saying to me, "You don't know, you just don't know, nobody could know that's not Aboriginal how close the Baha'i faith is to Aboriginal teaching." So anyhow, Aboriginal people who are true to their old laws and living in the old way are actually living and believing and feeling deeply most Baha'i laws. So I guess that's an angle on it anyway.
So it fit within, it was just a perfect fit. It kind of sounds like could have something to do with leading you down that path. It's interesting. Okay. I'm learning quite a bit here with you, Camilla. So thank you very much. I know our listeners are. But what we want to do is take a 30-second break. And so don't hang up. And listeners, please stay tuned. We'll be back in about 30 seconds, okay? Thank you.
You are listening to withinsightsradio.com and withinsights.com, your free online holistic publication resource magazine for achieving self-discovery and inspiration. Please feel free to explore our daily inspirational quotes and uplifting stories, exclusive interviews with local world-known inspirational leaders.
Well, welcome back to With Insights Radio. I'm pressing the wrong button on the switchboard. Iggy, see, that's what you get for giving me
trouble.
Hold on a
second. There you go.
Are you pressing it? Okay, maybe that's what happened. Two people pressing the same start stop button. Iggy, no, I'm just kidding. Well, welcome to With Insights Radio. I'm Rosa Bell and my brother Iggy Garcia. We have an amazing lady, Camilla Chance.
speaking to us live. She's calling from Australia, and she's sharing her journey, her story, how she had this encounter with a gentleman by the name of Danjo Clark, and it sounds like it really it transformed your life as well as being in service for the greater good. You wrote this book. There's so much wisdom within this book. As I'm already listening to you and the wisdom that you share, is just kind of the book is just going to be a reflection of your truth and the truth of really all people through the Aboriginal teachings and experiences. So welcome back.
Thank you very much, Rosa. And an encounter with whom did you say I had?
Danjo Clark.
Yes, I know you said something
okay.
Sounded like a German to me, but
oh,
you said
wow.
German. A shaman, I've you must have said.
No,
shaman.
I don't think I said that, but maybe that's what you heard. And
anyhow.
Maybe I'm channeling. I don't know.
Well, he wasn't German, but
yeah.
Wisdom Man has been published in Germany, in German. Maybe you are channeling.
It could be. Who knows? I've had I don't know if you, when you actually tuned in, I had a very interesting evening last night. Not only did Iggy do an amazing sacred drumming ceremony at a metaphysical center here in Columbus, Ohio, experienced quite out of this realm experience with the energy beings that were hovering over about 200 feet above the treetops. I could see him right outside of my bedroom window. So I think I'm just, who knows what happened. But it was real. I mean, my entire family
yes.
saw it.
Yes, it was real.
Yes. Definitely,
yes.
definitely.
Yes, I did hear that, yes.
So, any, you know, Camilla, I get if I said that, then I said that. It's possible. Anything.
That's what it sounded like. Yeah.
And, getting back to the story, and you were talking to us about your journey and how you got to meet Banjo, how Banjo received his name, and I'd like to get a little bit more into the book because you had shared that, you know, the teachings and what you learned from the people, the Aboriginal people, is going to change the world. It's going to help the world. Could you share a little bit more about that?
Well, one thing that Banjo said, which is not in the book, but he said it, and it probably summarizes the book. Banjo said, when forgiveness and love of the planet and a love of the people that walk upon it are your main priorities in life, then things get easier between people. Then the disputes tend to fade away. And the ultimate goal is the laughter returns. And he believes, and I do too, that there are no bad people in the world, only unhappy ones. And he had this strong belief that humankind should wipe their slate clean of interracial torment and meet as for the first time in peace and unity. And he said, if you meet everybody as if you're going to be friends for life with open hearts and open hands, then the laughter will come back. Then that is the way to be. And his book is totally full of forgiveness. He forgave people 100 times 100, and terrible things happened which are recorded in the book. And all the time he had this integrity and this feeling that policeman will change when he's older and he'll learn a bit of kindness, and the world itself has to change. There has to be a huge change. It just has to happen. And many people who have read the book, in fact, everywhere I go, people say to me, I was a very angry person when I read your book, and I become peaceful now. I'm peaceful now because I've been able to forgive everybody who has harmed me, because just meeting Banjo's strong and immensely loving character in the book has changed me. It was like sitting opposite him in a room with him telling me stories and feeling the power of his personality, and just that conversation with him as it felt has completely changed me. And those who have not read the book, they say, I have a friend who was peaceful after reading the book, and he was terribly angry before he read it, you know, and his whole character, his whole life changed. So everywhere I go, I meet people who say that. I'll tell you... Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to tell... I thought I'll tell you something from the book, which is not about that, but it is what intrigued the publishers. It is what stimulated the publishers to publish it in the first place, Penguin. So this is about Banjo's firstborn, little Vernon. And at 18 months, little Vernon, who had been perfectly well for a very long time, although he had chest trouble, but he had been perfectly well for months and months and months, suddenly one day he watched from the window of their house, and everybody who passed the gate, he ran to the gate and insisted on shaking their hand. So all the school children on their way to school, he shook their hands on their way. And all the people going to work, he made them get down from their wagons, horses and carts, and shake his hand on their way to work. And then the school children coming home from school, he did it again, watching by the window and running out to everybody and the people coming home. And everybody thought this was great. They thought it was lovely, this little boy saying something in his childish way and shaking their hand. And the school children went very happily on their way. But of course his parents were extremely worried, and his grandparents also. And they said, something's going to happen. You know, he's never done this before. Something's going to happen. And in the night, suddenly he couldn't breathe. So they took him to the hospital, and they explained that in the past they'd taken him in and they'd just been turned away again. And so the hospital people said, well, this time we'd better take him in, we'd better keep him overnight. And at 3 a.m, the school teacher came by because they had no telephone. The school teacher drove his car to them and said, there's a message from the hospital, they want you. So they went to the hospital and they found their little boy had passed on, and he was holding a beautiful rose in his hand, a very magnificent rose in his hand.
Oh.
And his father said, Banjo said, ain't he beautiful? And the nurse said, yes, he looked so beautiful, he seemed to be asking to be holding a flower so that when his parents came in, they'd see him holding a flower. And the hospital staff did not know, of course, that little Vernon always had wild flowers in his hands. He was never without flowers. He loved flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And his honorary grandfather, not his real grandfather, who used to come and visit him often, Grandfather Terek, always brought him wild flowers because he loved them so much. Anyhow, they took him home, took his body home, and Grandfather Terek suddenly turned up. And Grandfather Terek had been in town, and it took him 2 days normally to get home again, walking home, and he would stay in a halfway house and then come home. And the parents knew that there was no way he could have been told by another person what had happened, because that's what he'd been doing. And yet Grandfather Terek was around, and he did not have wildflowers in his hand. And he appeared a little way off, because that was an adaptation from tribal situations. If somebody in a tribe visits another tribe, he sits down so that he can't hear the tribe speaking, but where he can be seen. and the tribal elders will discuss whether he should be invited into the tribe or not. And eventually, normally after a long discussion, they'll send a little boy out to invite the person in and then give him every hospitality possible once he's been invited in. So that was tribal practice, and this has been modernized. An Aboriginal person normally will not come and knock on your door. He'll be where you can see him out of the window and wait patiently. So that's what Grandfather Terek did. He stood a little way away from the house, and he took his hat off. And Banjo said to his wife, "He knows, he knows. How could he know? He knows." So Banjo went out and said, "I have bad news for you." And Grandfather Terek said, "I know." And Banjo said, "Our little boy passed away in the night." And Grandfather Terek said, "I know." And he wouldn't tell them how he knew. And 3 months after the funeral, he said, "Now I will tell you what happened. In the night, when I was at this halfway house, I suddenly felt a great weight on my feet. I was asleep in bed, and I felt this great weight on my feet. And I thought it was one of the dogs, so I hunted him off and yelled at him, and he wouldn't move. I still felt the weight on my feet. So I lit a match, and I saw a little white coffin. And immediately I thought of your little boy and knew that was the message from him. So I hurried home first thing in the morning. I didn't delay for anything, and I came straight to you." So the book is full of incidents like that. Some of them terrible, some of them wonderful, all wonderful in the end. So they're all with the spiritual realm mixed up with the material realm.
Absolutely. That sounds like a beautiful book. I know Iggy has the book, so we're going to definitely read that. We're having a beautiful conversation and listening to beautiful, you know, you're an amazing storyteller. You know, I know that your book is going to, you really are. And Camilla Chance is who we are speaking with tonight on With Insights Radio. And I want to invite our listeners to, you know, if you have any questions or if you, anything that Camilla has shared with you, if you'd like to comment or please do so on the chat. Or feel free to call in. Our guest number is area code 646-595-3440. So if you have any questions for Mrs. Chance, please feel free to call. Iggy, what an amazing story. I'm just like,
vivid.
Vivid. Thing.
Usually I talk more, Camilla, but I'm just so engulfed in this interview. We've had a lot of situations. Rose and I, you know, were Native American, indigenous to Peru, South America, and a lot of the stuff that you're saying, we're very familiar with what you're talking about, and we're very connected. And we've had our grandmother who just passed recently, and she's been visiting us here lately, and, you know, she's kind of a jokester, so she's been reminding us that everything's good and everything's good. And we have a very big sense of connection, too, that way, that there is no separation, that everything is just, we're all one, and it's all love. And so I'm sitting here, and I'm just listening and learning. You know, sometimes that's the lessons we have to just go by sometimes. You know, instead of always talking, it's good to hear. And I'm glad that you took time to be with us today. I really appreciate that. I wanted to let you know that.
Thank you very much, Iggy.
Definitely.
Are there any questions from listeners?
Not at this time. And let me double check the chat here. Or let me check the callers. Not at this time. You know, it varies from time to time. I think we're just really enjoying the journey, your journey as you paint the picture of your experiences and his experiences and so forth. But, definitely. So this book was a book, a labor of love, you know, 27 years to give it word, because I find often, Camilla, that things of the spirit, things of the source, if you will, Sometimes there are words that are not able to describe what
yes,
the mind is. The mind and the words of the human vessel can sometimes be limited. So, how did you go about doing that? I know it's definitely a. I'm just curious with the process of writing. So it sounds like you were journaling your experiences, and you explained that you felt like the presence of Banjo was there with you as you were writing. Is that correct? Did I understand that correctly?
Well, the 25 of the years he was living, then he passed on, and the other 2 years the publisher was saying, I want this in or whatever.
Give me the book now.
It took 2 more years to finish it. But 25 of the years he was living and telling me. And he spoke in English, and he spoke most beautifully, but he knew his old language as well. And the thing is that it's a terrible cruelty also for the indigenous languages to die, because there are words there that do express spiritual feeling that we don't have English words for, or words in European languages for. For example, there's a situation which is constant for Aboriginal people, and it's expressed by the word dream time or dreaming, but there is no real translation for it, and the closest translation would be the eternal present. It's that all time is now. There isn't time. And the thing is that it is an experience of being in the spiritual realm, the eternal present. And that's the way Banjo lived. He lived in the eternal present, and anything that had happened was still happening now for him. And the future and the past and the present were one for him. And, for example, one time I wrote about his son Ian's passing, and this is significant for me in a way. I mean, I was very, very fond of Ian, but it's significant for me in that I was brought up that people were wonderful if they did not show emotion, particularly at funerals. A wife was wonderful if she could talk and laugh with the people at the funeral and just not let on the grief she might be feeling, or even the presence of her departed husband that she might be feeling. These things were not mentioned among my people, and possibly not believed in. But to Aboriginal people, having emotion, the right emotion, is a sign of maturity, and the right emotions are developed within their children from babyhood. They learn compassion from being a little baby. A mother will point out an insect and say, oh, poor thing, it's going that way and it shouldn't be going that way, poor thing. And the child will learn compassion and sharing from birth. And Banjo always said sharing is natural to babies anyway. It's natural and tends to get squashed for a few years, and then people wonder why they have to teach their child all over again. But among Aboriginal people, it was natural and it was always brought out. So anyhow, when Ian passed on, I wrote down Banjo's words, and then I wrote a little bit extra so that other readers would understand, non-Aboriginal readers would understand. And I gave the words about Ian's passing to Banjo to see if he was happy with the little bit extra I had written. And he said, you wrote a true word. I see Ian lying there in front of me. You wrote a true word. And the thing is that he was totally reliving it when he read my words. And it was the eternal present for him. And that is what he judged the truth of the words by. And then I said, but I put a little bit extra about how Aboriginal people, when somebody dies and when they're at a funeral, they feel all the previous funerals gone by that they've attended. They feel all the previous people who passed on, and the, when they grieve and yet are joyful for the person, then it's for all the people. And he said, oh yes, but you only wrote that so Gubbos can understand, you know, so that non-Aboriginal people can understand. And he accepted that, that that needed to be put in. But anyway, Banjo, when his son passed on from a heart attack and the ambulance was called and the people were carrying Ian out on a stretcher to the ambulance, the full moon that Ian always had loved shone on his face and Ian looked coming alive again. And Banjo called out to the universe as he was walking behind the stretcher, don't lose Ian, don't lose Ian, wake up, wake up. And he was proud of calling that out, and he wanted it in the book, and he felt that he was expressing the lamenting of the whole universe at the time, and that it was lamenting Ian's passing with him, the passing of a great spirit to a new stage of great spirit. And this is so different from the people who brought me up, who said, you must squash your emotions, you know. And Banjo was so proud of feeling the right emotions at the time, which he always felt. He always felt the right emotions for the right situation, you know, with a huge, huge compassion and huge feeling. So anyhow, that's a bit about writing the book, I guess.
That's very, very important. If our listeners, please remember that, you know, express your emotions. All emotions are healthy to be, and it's really important to flow with the emotions. It's when we don't allow ourselves to express or deny ourselves the those feelings is when we create dis-ease in our body, in our life, and there's imbalance, and it just causes a lot of stress, fear, and challenges. So that wisdom that book carries is tremendous. You know, that's why, you know, to find more information, they can go to your website, www.wisdommanbook.com. So very, very, I love how that just perfectly flowed. We have about a few minutes left, but I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, Camilla, for sharing
your
amazing journey in your book.
Well, it's been a great honor to be with you, that's for sure. The Baha'i Faith teaches that we need to change the hearts of people. There's no good changing institutions in order to change prejudice or change practices like dumping food or whatever. We have to change the hearts of people from the grassroots up, that humanity is infinitely adaptable. And yes, that it's not only disease in ourselves, but if you do something for another person without your heart being in it, they will feel it and it will do no good at all. We have to share, we have to do things out of selfless love for humankind. And this is a great happiness to people. The happiness will come back to the world if we do that.
Yes. Very. Your message is timely. Timely, very timely. So thank you once again. And our listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're going to want to listen to the archive of the show. So you
Definitely.
Haven't missed anything if you're just tuning in. So the archive will be available shortly after. So again, thank you. Please keep in touch with us. We would love to talk to you again sometime.
I'm sure there's a new book
keep
coming out, too.
Keep in touch with me.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
We will.
I would love that. I would love that.
Thank you.
I've never been to Australia. So it sounds like it might be a trip coming up, Rosa.
Yes,
I know.
You would be welcome to stay with me, absolutely. You and your family.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
And vice versa. Here, if you ever want to come to Columbus, Ohio. Yes, we're known as the heart of it all.
Yes, yes. It is a place with heart, I feel. Yes.
Definitely.
I haven't been there yet. But I know songs about the area.
Oh, very good.
Jamila, thank you very much for being with us, and we'll keep up with you, and we'll email you and correspond with you. I promise on that.
I hope you will. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your promise.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
Well, Iggy, an amazing show. I'm just blown away. Camilla is a beautiful messenger and just in service in a big way. So just honored to have this show with you and to have these amazing guests. We learned so much.
Yeah,
I'm
humbled. I was just totally engulfed in she, like you said, she's a great storyteller. She says through her heart, and I can feel it through her heart what she was portraying. And I've read part of the book, and I haven't read it all, but I tell you, my tears are running down my eyes sometimes when she was talking. So that's a lot of reasons that I didn't interject. So I apologize for disappearing.
No problem. So tune in next week too with Insights Radio, because our show has ended, our spot anyways. So till next time, folks, we love you. Infinite love and gratitude from the bottom of my heart.
Ho'oponopono to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.